The Cinema Specialist Phil and John are back, and happy new year to everybody who is listening. We are here to do a 2024 film year in review. Now, obviously, if you've listened to these in the past, we aren't just talking 2024 films. Sorry, 2020. It's just in my head at this point. We're not only talking 2024 film, we're talking movies from all over the every year. It just happens to be movies that we watch this year. We have different categories. We do have our top five movies of the year thus far, which I'll have to get into my whole Anora saga where I tried to go to the movie theater and then the movie theater couldn't play it after we sat there for 30 minutes. So I haven't seen Anora, which really pisses me off. But we're going to be doing our year in review. If you're a patron, it's January 1st. We just released yesterday the Poseidon Adventure. Our next movie for Patreon is going to be Nosferatu, the new one. So if you're looking to hear us talk about Nosferatu, the new one, sorry, I hate to use the phrase paywall, but it's like, we're putting it for our patrons because it fits more over there than it does over here. But that'll be our year in review movie that we do. Jordan Offer says, oh, no, Phil. I don't know what that means. So we'll see what ends up happening here. But this is going to be that's got to be about Anora. But anyway, we are going to be going through a bunch of topics here. Thankfully, John still had it. For some reason, I could not find the topics for the life of me. So here's what our topics are, our categories. It's best five first watches, no matter what year. Most disappointing movie, pleasant surprise, not as good as we remember it being, top three movie rewatches that are not in our top 100, worst watch from 2024, meaning it was released this year, top five movies of 2024, and then our best horror, best comedy, best drama, best action. The caveat for those last four is that they can't be in another category. So we can't use them twice, those movies that are in that last one. So for instance, if I have Nosferatu as one or two or three on my list, I can't use it again as the best horror movie that I watched for the first time this year because we're going a different route. So all of that being said, John, welcome. How was your New Year's? You feeling good? You feeling horrible? How's it going?
You know what? It's New Year's. I'm feeling exactly as I expected to today. 2025. I mean, we're in a point where hopefully we get some a better year for film than what we had this last year, I think. I mentioned it on the Patreon podcast this year, but like 2024 kind of felt like, it felt like a writer's strike year, you know? It felt like a year that was influenced by a writer's strike and didn't have these highs that I feel like we were talking about this time last year when we were doing this year in review.
Well, what's funny to me is I'm realizing actually when we did our year in review last year, most of the movies that ended up as one of my favorite movies of the year, I hadn't seen yet. And I feel like that's going to be the case again this year. I haven't seen Anora. I haven't seen The Brutalist. Hell, I haven't even seen Wicked. Okay. Yep. So like I got to get out there and I got to actually see some movies. But again, doing this list, we always like to do this podcast because it's more about like, what did you watch this year? I barely hit 200 movies. I was cruising. And then the second half of the year, I did the stupidest thing of all time. And that was work two essentially full-time jobs and a bunch of part-time jobs. And I just stopped watching movies like crazy. Things have calmed down for me. But like my 150th movie was watched in July. Letterboxd tracks all of this. So my 150th movie was watched in July. My 200th was Nosferatu, which I saw 4 days ago. Like that's how bad it was for me. I was cruising for the first through the first 7 months. And then all of a sudden I get here and it was like, never mind. But this year will be a better year. Hopefully I can get some more movies in. And Nosferatu is not a bad note to end on, as we'll talk about soon. But I'm having a hard time because I'm like, there are a lot of movies that I feel like I will enjoy that I just kind of missed as the year went on. Although I will say, I saw Conclave. That was a 3-star movie. I saw Dune Part 2. That didn't make my list. We talked about that a lot, actually, this year, where I originally gave it 4 stars. I ended up dropping it down to 3.5 after a second viewing. So here we are. We're doing this. John, I have a question for you, though. What was the last movie you watched this year?
The last movie I watched is Past Lives. Obviously. It was Past Lives.
Oh, Past Lives. Okay. Okay. I didn't hear what you said. That's a cut. For a second, it cut. Go ahead.
So every year, like with my birthday at the end of the year, the one thing I do for my birthday, the one tradition I have is I make all my friends come over, we eat Chinese food, and we watch whatever movie I want to watch because it's the only time I can make them watch a movie without them complaining about it. Mm. And this year I was like, okay, I have a friend who like we usually don't watch subtitle stuff because he like has a bit of dyslexia, so it's hard to read. He was out of town this year. I was like, oh man. It's been a long time since I'd watched Past Lives. So I'm like, hey, we're going to watch Past Lives. And then immediately all my friends are like, John, how could you make us have feelings? This is so rude of you. Mm-hmm.
To do it so late, too. So late in the year.
I know. But yeah, the last movie I watched this year was Past Life. It's actually really funny because you said you hit your 150th in July and then your 200th with Nosferatu. I watched 200 movies in that span of time.
Jesus. That's insane. I mean, I'm hoping I usually get around 300 because I normally have some days where I can watch one or two. My wife and I have also been doing a big Game of Thrones rewatch. So that's been taking up a lot. And then as anybody who's over on the Patreon knows, I do Australian Survivor for the Patreon where I'm doing it. Like I'm doing three episodes a week and Australian Survivor is no joke. Which by the way, shout out Daisy's Blindside from All Stars. Holy shit. That episode is incredible.
Yeah.
Oh my God. That was I'm sitting there. I'm like, okay, we're going to get into the swing of things. And it's like, actually here's like the best episode, pre-merge episode you'll ever see in your life. But anyway, here we are. We're going to talk. My last movie of this year, since you didn't ask, was American Beauty. I hadn't seen it since we did the podcast back in May of 2023 about it when I had it as my number two movie. It's kind of my go-to movie. And John, we're going to be talking actually. We decided our next podcast, which will be in 2 weeks. We're going to get ourselves onto a rhythm here. We're going to do like the 13th, I think, will be most inspiring movies. And that can be inspiring for anything. You know, normally when we're doing like this movie was released on Christmas Day. Well, if you give me a movie that wasn't released on Christmas Day, John, it doesn't fit the criteria. And I know when we were doing horror movies, it was tough. And, you know, it can be a little difficult sometimes to figure out what fits in what genre. But for most inspiring, it is what it is. And American Beauty is that movie that I just go to all the time when you're like, okay, like either you're feeling down or some change is coming, a new year is coming, what's going on? It's just such an easy movie to sit down. And for me, it's the best written movie ever. I can officially say that. I normally would go and say it was Eternal Sunshine. Mm-hmm. American Beauty subtext, you know, as they say in Barcelona, what's the thing above the subtext? The subtext is just incredible in that movie. And every time I watch it, it just gets better and better. 25th anniversary was 2024. So I snuck it in just under the wire to make sure I got it in on the 25th anniversary. But that was just rewatching that movie and just seeing the way it is so designed. What I really appreciated about it on this watch was America had such an identity in 1999. Yep. It really did. Like America was the picket fence. Look at this family. Everything's great. You know, all of a sudden your neighbors could be gay. Like, what is this? Like, what a trend, you know, like in a suburb, not necessarily in a city. And that was such a unique thing. And this country just had such an identity. And to watch a movie set in 99, made in 99, with just about a bunch of normal people, and to see how they were perceived in that year, like Alan Ball just absolutely knocked it out of the park with everything. So it was a good note to end on. I'm really happy I did it. And here I am. Yeah. Here I am, John. I'm still alive. I'm still kicking. We're into 2025. Let's get this thing started. I don't know what we normally start with, but I think we should start with most disappointing.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, my most disappointing comes from a kind of the hype that surrounds the movie. And it was just one that didn't really hit for me as well as I thought it would in a genre that I tend to like. But it was Starship Troopers.
Really?
Yeah, I watch it and
you're not doing your part.
I know, but I never watched it. And I had some friends who like really enjoy. I have one friend who's like really into sci-fi, and he was like, "Hey, let's watch this." And they're like, "Okay, sure." Like, it's one of those ones that I sat down with the boys and we watched it. And obviously, people talk very highly of Starship Troopers, and it has that satire, it has that like biting criticism of militarism and things like that. It just didn't land for me.
I find that very interesting. I'm surprised that you don't love that one. To me, Starship Troopers is just, I saw Starship Troopers in theaters, man. I was 5 years old. Yeah. My dad had no idea that there was going to be a sex scene in that movie. He thought it was just going to be aliens getting shot the entire time. But like, I saw that movie in theaters. Like, I have like the growing up with that movie and how it really does just get into like, you know, another movie that's really just making fun of America and like war and sign up. Everything's great. Yeah. Football and all that. I just find it to be such an entertaining satire. And so I'm surprised that was your answer. I think mine was a lot simpler. I think personally, if you want to hear what it was.
I do. Yes.
The new Mean Girls.
You know what? I almost put that. I also almost put that as my most disappointing.
The new Mean Girls I've been using this term a lot because I have to argue with Packers fans, and arguing with Packers fans is like beating your head against the wall. Like you can scream at a wall as much as you want, but the wall's not going to change. So I've been arguing a lot with Packers fans lately, and I just keep using the phrase mega ass. Like the Packers are mega ass. They can't beat any good teams. Yeah. They are. And that's really how I felt about Mean Girls. Like, that movie isn't just bad. It is something more than bad. And there was a lot of hope. I mean, obviously, the original Mean Girls is a classic. Everybody loves the original Mean Girls. That movie was a movie that was meant for women that guys love before we kind of got into an era of, like, it was okay for guys to like chick flicks, right? Yeah. And Mean Girls crossed that boundary. And this new one was a lazy, crappy retelling of it. And I just hated the movie. And it was so disappointing. And it was one that, like, we pretty much started the year with. And I'm sitting here and I'm like, okay, that is the most disappointing. There was another movie that was pretty close for it, but that was my most disappointing movie. It happened to be a movie from this year, which this could have been anything, but I want to throw up some comments real quick here, John, before you comment. Raptor 8415, his last movie of the year was Good Morning Vietnam. No reason, just had never seen it. And Jordan Alford was We Live in Time. That movie stunk. I've never even heard of We Live in Time.
So. That was the one with Andrew Garfield and Florence Pugh, right?
Was it?
I think so. Maybe. Maybe I'm thinking of that differently, but I think that's the one, right?
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
With John Crowley.
Yeah. I didn't get
around. I like how he says a movie stinks and then gives it 2.5 stars.
Oh,
John Crowley did Brooklyn. Man, Brooklyn, one of the most underrated movies ever made. Brooklyn is a freaking masterpiece. I love Brooklyn is a movie. It's been 10 years since that came out. Wow. I need to rewatch Brooklyn this year. Yeah. Brooklyn. If you haven't seen Brooklyn, that movie is so incredibly well made. Saoirse Ronan, that was probably the year she should have won the Oscar. I forget what beat her. But if that was probably her best shot. Man, now you guys got me all heated. I want to go watch Brooklyn. Thanks a lot. All right, John, where are we going? Where are we going next?
Well, I think if we start with most disappointing, we should probably go to Pleasant Surprise next, right? Like the antithesis of it.
Probably fair. Oh, it was Brie Larson. Okay, she wasn't going to beat Brie Larson for Room. Anyway, yes, we should go to biggest, most pleasant surprise. What was your pleasant surprise?
So I had a little bit of a choice with this. So I kind of cheated. I put two pleasant surprises because we ended up covering.
You're getting the commodus thumb down. You're dead, John.
I know, but I have a reasoning for it because like it's two different types of pleasant surprises. The first was a movie that we ended up covering for the Patreon this year. And that was The Straight Story.
Yeah, that was almost my pick for this, but I had seen it before, so I didn't want to use it.
Yeah, I had never seen it before, but I still had expectations for it because it's a David Lynch film and things. So as much as it was like this pleasant surprise at how well David Lynch made this family movie that's just like this really wholesome story and a Disney movie to boot, I still had expectations for it. So I don't know if it was my biggest pleasant surprise, but the one that upon like going over all the movies I watched this year that I was like, yeah, actually I really like that. Didn't expect it to, because it's a sequel to a movie that I am like notoriously low on. And that was Rocky II.
That's Jordan Alford's favorite movie.
I know.
But second favorite movie. Yeah.
Rocky II is in my opinion, just so much better than the first Rocky. And I was shocked when I watched it and was just like, wow, I really enjoy this movie a lot. So I think that just has to come as a pleasant surprise because I had such low expectations going into it.
I think the first two Rocky movies, and I know you're not a big fan of the first Rocky, and I feel like a lot of people have moved away from the first Rocky now that it's almost 50 years old, which is interesting because I think still from a sports perspective, I think it's an all-time classic. I mean, what I think a lot of people don't understand, and I didn't grow up in Philly, but I grew up 45 minutes from Philly in the part of South Jersey that I'm from. And like that movie really did just capture the people of Philadelphia in a way that most movies can't actually capture the people that live there. But Rocky II on a rewatch, that was so much better than I remember. What did I end up giving Rocky II? I mean, I can't wait to turn it on here and then be like, oh, I gave it 1 star. Never mind, John. I gave it 3.5.
Yeah, which is why I gave it as well.
So much better than it should be.
Yeah, I remember like when we were covering it for the podcast or for the Patreon, the thing that got me about it was like there is this fantastic part in the writing about Apollo Creed and his character and the disappointment he is for like not going for it and everything. And it's just like the reason why it didn't become a 4-star movie for me was because it didn't delve into that deep enough, but it's still there and it's so good. And it's just, yeah, I just think it's so much better than the first Rocky, which is why it ends up as a pleasant surprise. And I think on further rewatches, I could see it sneaking up to a 4-star movie for me.
Might even be one of your most inspiring movies, maybe, John.
It's possible.
I got the Batman.
Yeah.
In a year where we watched nothing but crap of Marvel movies, because we really did hit the creme de la creme of things you don't want in your house, don't want playing on your TV, don't want to acknowledge you've ever seen. And I'm going to be getting to that in a second here, everybody. But the Batman's amazing. And I'm not a big superhero guy. I've said that over and over again. We went through the entire Marvel series. I didn't have a single 4-star movie, although I love the Captain Americans and I thought the Guardians movies were solid. I didn't have a single 4-star Marvel movie. I love The Dark Knight. I think The Dark Knight Rises is overhated. I think that Batman Begins is underrated, even though it got to the point where it was overrated. And now I think it's down to being underrated again. I like those types of superhero movies, right?
But
I was not I went out of my way to not watch this movie. I'm like, how many times do I need to see a Batman movie? But when Matt Reeves makes a movie, you should probably go see the movie.
Yeah.
That movie was just incredible. And like, I loved it so much. It just missed out on making my top 5 first watches.
Wow. Yeah.
But what a great, great, great movie. So that was my pleasant surprise for this year, how they actually turned it into a mystery film instead of an action movie or superhero movie. And I really appreciated that. So that's my pleasant surprise.
I think if we were doing top 5 rewatches not in our top 100, it was on that list. It just misses out on my top 3. But again, that was so, like, I enjoy Matt Reeves' The Batman so much that the local indie theater in town did a 9 Batman film marathon in November, where if you stayed awake the entire time, you won a year worth of movies.
Yeah.
I almost went just so I could watch this movie on the big screen again.
Yeah. Now, it's solid. And Jordan says here, I love how Reeves understands that Bruce is just a mask and he's Batman 24/7 and has it been ever since the day. Like, exactly. And that's missing from the other movies. That really is. I'm excited. I mean, the Batman 2 just keeps getting pushed back. Now it's back to 2027.
Yeah.
You know. All right. All right. So those are our 2 for that. Let's do our worst watch of any year, the worst movie we watched this year. Cause I'm going to get this out of the way right now, cause I don't want to talk about it. We did a whole podcast on it. The Marvels is one of the worst movies ever made, quite possibly the worst movie I've ever seen.
Yeah. I mean, I'm obviously a bit higher on this one than you, but I totally understand where that's coming from.
John, you could be on the core of the earth. You could be in Marine. What is it? Marianas Trench.
Yeah.
And you'd still be higher than me on this movie. So yeah, to be a bit higher isn't that hard. I hated the Marvels so much. That was the most cringe of the Marvel movies, and that's saying a lot because there's some really bad. And what's funny is, John, you're a little bit higher than me. You gave it 1 star. How low I am. I'm like I said, I'm in Marianas Trench.
Yeah. But I get it. And I think also it's exasperated by the fact that the Marvels was at the end of our Marvel watch, and we were so tired of Marvel movies by that point.
That's also my greatest review ever.
What is it again?
BoJack Horseman season 4, episode 6.
Ah, of course.
Anybody who doesn't know what the name of that is, it's stupid piece of shit.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Anyway, here we are. Jordan just hit us with this. People have reported that Reeves is having personal issues. That's why it's delayed. I hate to hear that.
I do too. But
I hate to hear that.
Yeah.
All right, John, hold on, Kevin Hernandez. I aged a little watching Crawl Space.
Wow. That's a review.
And his was Invasion of the Body Snatchers, 1978. That's a really good movie. All of the Invasion of the Body Snatchers movies are good. Even the OG is such a classic.
Are we still counting 2008's The Invasion in that? Because that movie is
only movie's actually called Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Okay, that's fair.
The body must be snatched.
Yes, of course. My worst watch of the year was one that it's really interesting because it had it. There's a, like this huge mass following around it, and I have to pull up my Letterboxd review for this for it to fully grasp the gravitas of how much I hated this movie. The review I gave for this movie, oh, it was a lot longer than I thought, but I'll just give you the important part of it. I know I have a pretentious film taste, but I try to avoid sitting on my high horse when it comes to watching movies. Art is subjective and people should enjoy it, they enjoy it. However, the response from the general public on this film is a perfect example of the vapidity of American moviegoers and truly concerns me for the state of society.
So you liked it?
I hated this movie. And it is the first Terrifier.
Oh, I haven't seen any of the Terrifier
whole movies. Week. And it's so weird because Art the Clown is such a phenomenal horror villain from a design standpoint. Acted superbly. Like, the most iconic horror villain we've had introduced since Ghostface. And that's saying something. This movie is such a steaming pile. It is so bad. The worst acting I have ever seen. The script is just non-existent. And I get it. Like, the sequels are kind of like more torture porny.
Did you watch the sequels?
No, because the first one was so bad.
Third one is the one that people are like actually enjoying the most.
Yeah. But the thing is like the first one's an hour and a half. And I was like, I can't do this. It's so bad. And I'm not one of the people who's like, oh, the kills are too gory or something. Whatever. I'll watch the grossest movies. I don't care about that type of thing. The second and third one are like 2.5 hours each. And I could not imagine wasting 5 hours of my life on those movies.
Yeah. I hear you.
That was absolutely my worst watch of the year. And it's not even close.
I like that. Well, let's go into the worst watch from this year. This movie was close to being my worst watch. And this was close to being my most disappointing. Okay, let's be real. It's not even close to the Marvels with how bad it is. And it's bad. I have Drive Away Dolls. This was almost my most disappointing. But as soon as I saw that it was getting a January release and it was a Coen movie, my expectations shrunk. Significantly. Yeah. Same thing how Mel Gibson has a movie coming out this January. My expectations are very low. If Mel Gibson is releasing a movie in January, that means it's not good because that means it was probably supposed to be an Oscar movie and they forgot and it screened very poorly. Yeah. That's what happened with Drive Away Dolls. So my expectations lowered. So I can't call it my most disappointing because also Mean Girls, like people actually pretended to like that movie. So I thought I was going to like it when I went and saw it. Drive Away Dolls is not funny. It's not entertaining. There's nothing. It's not clever. It's just nonsense, nonsense, nonsense. And I think I had a good review for this one, too. Let me see if I did. Did we do a whole podcast on Drive Away Dolls?
We did. We did do a whole podcast on Drive Away Dolls.
That makes me wonder why we do these types of podcasts sometimes. I actually did. I said, wow, I hated this movie, hated it, hated all of it, except Bill Camp. What a guy. Hopefully ends up in better projects than this unfunny piece of garbage. This movie hurt me. Ethan Coen hurt me. Trisha Cook hurt me. I loathe this movie.
Yeah. Well,
I got 5 likes, dude. We're back.
these movies, like, it's funny because there's so many movies that we covered this year in the early parts, like in the January, February stretch. That was when we decided we couldn't watch new movies every week because it was killing us.
January's bad. And like, I'm even more scared right now of like what's about to happen because of like the writer's strike and stuff. This is when poop was just, it was all pushed back. And I feel like that's where we're at. Sorry to be crude here, but like when you're talking about some of these movies, everything just got pushed to here. This is going to be a bad month of film, a really bad month. Thankfully, the Oscar movies were mostly limited releases with the exception of Wicked, which, you know, obviously now it's on Amazon or whatever, so I can watch that. Yeah. But there are some serious problems here. Jordan Alford says, mine was Carry On. Absolutely unwatchable. Haven't seen Carry On.
I haven't either.
I ever will.
No. It's a Netflix movie. We've talked about Netflix movies like ad nauseum at this point. We are just so skeptical of them being good. Yes, there's the occasional
really. Did you hear what they're doing?
Sorry?
Did you hear what Netflix did?
No.
Do you follow Discussing Film?
No.
Wait, I think Discussing Film is mostly real, right? Anybody?
Yeah, I think so.
I don't know. Somebody can tell me if I'm wrong, but supposedly Netflix execs told screenwriters that they need to start writing more of what people like the actions people are doing on screen so that audiences can follow what's happening if they're not paying full attention.
I'm sorry, what?
I think that's real. I think that's
what does that mean? Like dialogue explaining what they're doing? That's dumb. That's really, I hope that's not real.
Let me see. I think it's real.
Man, I wish this was April and we could say this is an April Fool's Day post, but yikes, that is terrifying.
Yeah, it was about casual viewing. Tells writers to announce what they're doing just in case people aren't watching closely.
What's the point of, I mean, like, I throw movies on in the background, but let me tell you, when I have a movie on the background, everything else I'm doing becomes the background.
Yeah, exactly. That's, yeah. I mean, even like, I'll throw on, like, you know, what the Twilight Zone was on last night because of New Year's, they do the marathon on Sci-Fi. Right. And I'm just like, well, my wife was talking to me. I'm like, hold on. Rod Serling speaking. Excuse me. I can't hear it. Raptor here says Transformers 1 was the worst movie you watched this year.
Yeah.
What was your worst watch from this year? I don't need to talk.
It was also a movie we did an entire podcast about. It was Argyle because holy cow, that movie was bad.
It's funny. I haven't gotten to the movies much this year after we started doing that. Like I said, I was very stupid with how much I started doing work-wise. The first four movies we watched were Driveway Dolls, Mean Girls, Argyle, and then I think A Quiet Place, Day One. I mean, what a disaster.
Yeah.
Like, just what a disaster across the board.
Yeah. And again, this is why we stopped going to new release movies every week, because it just wasn't working.
Yeah, we just had to. All right, let's get another one here. We have Ty. He says, what's up, guys? My favorite film of the year was Kinds of Kindness. Did you get to see Kinds of Kindness? I didn't see it.
I may be talking about it later.
Okay. Okay.
But, yeah.
There you go.
Argyle was just so bad on every level, which sucks because it's like, I love Sam Rockwell. Sam Rockwell's a fantastic actor. And, you know, we see him in this like semi-leading role in this film. And it's just so disappointing. It was so, again, it was that stupid sequence with the smoke and everything that was just like, this is the worst movie I have seen in a very long time.
It was bad, man. It was rough. I mean, that's really what you could say. Jordan says he said it was good, but it was lower tier Yorgos, which, I mean, that happens, right? It's like lower tier PTA is still a great movie most of the
time. Yeah, exactly. As we were talking about with like our Christmas Day releases, right? Like, it's unfair that PTA's worst movie is still like a 4-star movie.
Yeah, exactly. Argyle was terrible. Argyle was like, that was just cringeworthy. I mean, I look at my bottom three between Mean Girls, Argyle, and Driveway Dolls. It's like, you could watch these movies or put glass in your eyes. Like, it's close. I mean, it's very close. All right, let's do some positive stuff here. So let's actually talk. Let's do our top five movies from 2024 before we jump into anything else. So again, this is what we've seen thus far in 2024. So there's a lot of movies we haven't seen yet. Like I said, Anora, The Brutalist might be the most impossible movie to find. I know a bunch of my friends who live in LA went to the Vista to see it, which makes me so angry. I'm like, you're getting to see it on the huge with 35 millimeter and all that. But let's talk about our top five, and we'll start with number five. John, what was your fifth?
Well, I'm glad you asked, because it's Kinds of Kindness.
Okay, good. There you go.
Yeah, I mean, this is it my favorite Yorgos film? No. Is it a Yorgos film that I ever think will reach my top 100? No. Was this wild 3-hour journey that I watched at during my best friend's bachelor party, because all he wanted to do was go to an AMC theater, because we're from Canada, we don't have AMC theaters here.
I love that.
And
did you enjoy the 45 minutes of trailers before the movie?
Oh my God, I don't know how you do it.
We don't go to AMC.
Yeah, like, that was brutal, especially before you're sitting down for a 3-hour movie at 9:30 at night.
Yeah,
my God, that was a choice. But I mean, part of the experience was going to this movie with my friend, who's this massive Yorgos fan, and 9 other friends who are like not cinema people, all hating it the entire time.
Yeah,
but I guess it was. So last year when Poor Things came out, I was like, okay, like, yeah, it's a good movie. It doesn't feel like a really good Yorgos movie to me, because it didn't have a lot of that like Yorgosness to it, in my opinion. Like, his better films, like The Lobster, Killing of the Sacred Deer, The Favorite, those type of movies. Kinds of Kindness felt like a more this is the movie that Yorgos really wanted to make. Mm-hmm. And it is him just doing what he does. The acting in it is absolutely spectacular. It is weird. I get why it didn't receive this big reception. It's mm-hmm. essentially like three short movies piled yeah. into one. It's yeah. confusing because the character, like the actors all play different characters in each of the things. But man, oh man, it was so weird and so wild. Emma Stone was brilliant in it, as is Jesse Plemons. It was just so much fun.
Yeah, I'll have to check that one out. I mean, I like Yorgos. There's a couple of his movies that I just haven't gotten to, and that was one of them. Again, I think that came out just... I live in a part of Florida where we're not getting the smaller releases, yeah. and that's what Kind of Kindness was, which sucked. Jordan says the sex tape reveal had him and his brother in hysterics. So,
oh, yeah. That was hands down one of the funniest film moments of 2024.
There you go. Speaking of comedies, my number five is Long Legs. Yeah. If it wasn't for the third act of Long Legs would be a perfect movie. Yeah. The third act of Long Legs is rough. And it's really like the last 10 minutes of Long Legs where I'm like, why are we doing this? Like, you could see, and I talked about this when we did a podcast on it, you could see the producer interference big time. Mm-hmm. And it does hurt the movie. And I know some people have said, well, Oz Perkins wanted that. Maybe. But I also feel like he might be saying that so that he keeps getting gigs because he wants to keep making movies. That was really the only downside. Otherwise, great horror movie. Really enjoyed it. Although not my favorite horror movie of the year, it comes in here at number five for me.
Yeah, I mean, it was solid. I really enjoyed the performances we got in that film. I think Nicolas Cage did like one of the weirdest. I mean, he's Nicolas Caging it, definitely, for sure. But in like such a perfect way. The way that third act kind of reveals, it does feel weird. It feels a bit like, now that I'm thinking back on it, it has a bit of that like finale of Twin Peaks The Return vibe to it.
Mm.
You know, where with like the Tulpa reveal and everything that happens at the end of that yeah. season. It has that bit of a vibe where it's like, okay, what's going on? But it doesn't have like David Lynch doing it, so it doesn't quite land as well.
I agree. Yeah.
But... yeah, Long Legs was very good. It was a great film that came out this year, and it didn't disappoint.
Yeah, Nicolas Cage, I'm surprised, hasn't gotten more credit as Oscar time has come around here.
Well, I mean, it's a horror movie. How could they?
I know. Does that mean no Lily Rose Depp? Is Lily Rose Depp screwed? Anyway, I'm going to do my four first because it's Dune Part 2. Movie we talked about in depth, podcast, whatever. Dune Part 2. I had it as a 4-star movie. I rewatched it. It decreased for me. It's a little slow. It's a little uneven. It's still a really great movie. I mean, I have it as my number four, but that was ultimately like, this was at the top. And now I'm like, it drops a little bit. So I'm going to put it here at number four. And I do feel that as I see more and more movies that came out this year, this will probably drop out of my top five entirely. It's by no means locked in. My top three are it's really not even my top three. It's really just my top two. My third place, though, I give the edge over this because I was more entertained by the one that came in at third, which, John, you are going to disagree with so hard, and I can't wait for it. So what do you have at number four?
Well, I mean, just speaking on Dune 2, I still think that was kind of like the most overhyped movie of this year. I do need to give it another rewatch, and I probably will in the lead up to the Oscars, because there's no way it's not getting a Best Picture nom.
Yeah.
So I'll give it another watch. Maybe it'll be like Oppenheimer, which I came around on a lot more post-Oscars. Mm-hmm. But we'll see. My number four is really weird. And I clarified with you about whether or not we can account it, because technically the movie was originally released in 2022 and it did the festival circuit for a while, never got picked up, never got distributed. So they had
it's to... on Canopy down here now, because I know what you're going to say. It's on Canopy now. And I almost threw it on the other night, but it's like 80 minutes long. And I was like, does my wife really want to watch this movie with me?
Yeah. And it's on Amazon up here. So okay. I recently rewatched it too. It's Hundreds of Beavers. This is one of the funniest movies. Like, when I saw this in theaters, it was one of the greatest, funniest movie-going experiences I have ever had, to sit in a theater full of a bunch of people watching this Benny Hill film, which is absolutely ridiculous. It is beyond any sense of, like, why is this funny? It's all slapstick comedy the entire time. It's so ridiculous. But this movie has me hooting and hollering the entire time.
Yeah, I like I said, I almost checked it out just because it was on there. And then I was like, okay, we're not going to do this tonight. I think we threw on, oh, that was when we were watching Scrooge because it was Christmas night. Yeah. So we threw on Scrooge instead. But yeah, I want to check that one out, John. You've hyped that one up since like, would you see it for the first time?
February, March? I think is
February,
when I saw it.
Yeah, I knew it was early in the year. I remember you talking about it a lot. So what's your number three?
My number three is kind of the one that's been picking up a lot. Picked up a lot of steam after its release late in the summer. Got really, really popular. It's, you know, we have see people on like the social medias talking about it in like not the way the movie should be. It's The Substance.
Mm-hmm. Haven't seen that. That's a Netflix movie too, right?
No, I don't think so.
I think it's on Netflix now. Am I wrong on that?
Oh, maybe. It's quite possible. I don't know. I don't use my Netflix that often. Also, my Netflix is different.
Oh, no, it's on Prime. You're wrong. I was wrong. I'm wrong. Incorrect. Okay. I need to pay for it on Prime then.
This movie was... It was spectacular. And this was a movie that when it was released, I knew I was going to go to it. I knew I was going to enjoy it. It was going to be one of those things that was like, okay, yeah, this is the type of movie that I like. It's body horror... It does body horror so well. It feels like some of the best body horror we have gotten when the director's last name isn't Cronenberg.
Yeah.
And
I really want to see it. And it got the Globe nomination. And I mean, obviously
it's like picking Marvel up steam again for like a best picture nom.
Yeah.
And for a horror movie to get a best picture nom, like it's got to be pretty good and pretty big. Right.
Yeah.
So, it's just anchored by these fantastic performances by both Demi Moore and Margaret Qualley. Dennis Quaid is despicable in the film, and it feels so good. It's just, when you're watching this movie, I feel like a lot of people watch it and don't really grasp what it's trying to say. This is the type of movie that you maybe don't feel like you should watch a second time, because it is a hard watch. Like, it's like hardcore body horror in this movie, but it's something on subsequent watches you just pick up more and more of the themes that they're getting at, and that's why it's almost disappointing how much the younger generations are talking about The Substance and not understanding what it is.
Yeah, Jordan over here says it's really interesting, but I thought it was kind of flawed. Demi Moore is phenomenal, and Dennis Quaid is disgusting in it. My God, I want to check it out. I will check it out. But I'm going to have to wait because I think that's what it came down to, is I didn't want to pay for it. So I was like, my number three, a movie John does not like.
Oh,
Furiosa. I like Furiosa. I thought, hey, look, is Furiosa a pointless movie? Absolutely. There is no need for that movie to have been made, but I liked it. I liked the story. I liked the way it looked. I thought it was a really, really, really good movie. So, yeah, I have Furiosa as my number three, just to piss off John a little bit too, you know? And here's Jordan. Whoa, Jordan coming in from the rafters. I loved Furiosa. I might have to start doing the podcast with Jordan, John.
Hey, whoa. No. It's fine. And it's... okay, I can see where Furiosa comes from for some people. I was so disappointed in this movie. It could have ended up as my most disappointing movie of the year, in all honesty. But I had pretty low expectations with it coming out, you know, almost a decade later than the movie that it was prequeling, and not having the reason everyone was clamoring for a Furiosa movie in the first place, which was Charlize Theron. So it felt bland to me. It felt like it didn't do justice to this character. Mm-hmm. That is portrayed so well in Fury Road, and it just felt so pointless.
Yeah. I agree that it's kind of pointless, but I saw it was well made. I was entertained the entire time. It's a great action movie. Would have been my best action movie if it didn't make this list.
Sure.
And so I have it at number three, and it made no money, which is really the main reason why nobody's talking about it anymore. Yeah. Kevin Hernandez said probably not a great movie, but Twisters was so much unexpected fun. That doesn't make my top five, but that is that was pure.
Well, so.
Yeah.
Well, can I talk about the timeliness of this? Because my number two is Twisters.
Really?
I loved this movie. This is one of those. I raved about it when we did it for the Patreon. This movie made me feel like a kid again when I went to the movie theater. Mm-hmm. It was so much fun. And it is what the essence of going to the movie theater was for me. I absolutely love it. I preached this movie to literally all of my friends. I was like, guys, you have to go watch Twisters. This is like the summer blockbuster we have been waiting for. This gave me faith that Hollywood could maybe actually make a good legacy sequel. Mm-hmm. And it could be like, we talked about The Poseidon Adventure on the Patreon this week and disaster films. This was a disaster film and it came back and it was so, so good. Glenn Powell, Daisy Edgar Jones, both phenomenal in this movie. It is something that I can watch over and over again and never grow tired of.
I gave it 3 stars. It's perfectly entertaining. It brought me back to the late 90s, early 2000s when they used to make good versions of these movies. Now so much of it's come down to branding. A lot of these movies are Transformers and like other versions that we've seen a million times that are in these massive franchises that mm-hmm. nobody really cares about anymore. But yeah, I saw Twisters in a theater out in LA and like the Amazon theater. It was so funny. And like they're setting up for some premiere right out there. And I'm like, I'm going in to see Twisters. Like, what's up, everybody? Yeah, Twisters solid. My number two, though, my most recent watch of 2024, which is Nosferatu.
Okay.
I have Nosferatu at number two. In a kind world, Nosferatu would get an Oscar nomination for Best Picture. Lily Rose Depp would probably land one too. Nicholas Hoult, unfortunately for Nicholas Hoult, he is going to go down as an actor in 30 years where people are going, oh my God, Nicholas Hoult was so good. He must have been nominated for Oscars and stuff, huh? No, never. Nicholas Hoult is just going to be that guy, but he's in nothing but good movies. I mean, really, I mean, Renfield's okay, but it is funny that he went from like Renfield to Nosferatu. This movie is beautiful. Gorgeous to look at. Eggers' direction is out of control. Amazing. It looks so good. All the acting is top notch. The creature design on Nosferatu is super interesting. The first scene between Nicholas Hoult and Count Orlok is just like impeccable. It's so well done. And it is the most movie mm-hmm. that Robert Eggers has made. Because right. so many of his movies, you know, The Lighthouse all takes place on an island. The Witch all takes place in like this, you know, small area. The Northman expands the world, but The Northman's like this movie. I was like, oh my God, we have watched Robert Eggers take that next step. He wow. took that next step with this movie. Is it his best movie? No, I think I'd still take The Lighthouse or The Witch. Maybe The Northman might be my favorite, but he is 4 for 4 in my book with 4-star movies. Yeah. So great movie. Really worth a watch. If you haven't seen Nosferatu yet, like I said, we're going to be doing that on the podcast next week. So there you go.
Yeah, it's something I have to watch this week so I can podcast about it next week. So it'll be watched. I've been highly anticipating this. I was supposed to see it last weekend, but plans fell through and I didn't get a chance. And it turns out can't convince my mom to go to a vampire movie with me.
I mean, it's kind of, I saw it with my mom and my dad and my sister. Like we went as a family and stuff. It's a little bit of a weird movie to watch with your mom. I'm not going
to
lie.
I couldn't convince her to go on my birthday to go see this movie with me. So it was a tough sell.
Yeah.
But I'll just go see it probably, let's be real,
tomorrow
if I don't end up going tonight.
and in a cast that's loaded with talent, like Lily Rose Depp to me just like steals it. And I do think that from like a costuming and creature visual effects and stuff, this movie has to be nominated for stuff.
I'm really looking forward to seeing it.
It's super good. All right, June, what are John? Yeah. What was your top movie for 2024 as of January 1st, 2025?
Well, Jordan Alford will be back to praising me. It's Anora, and it's hands down Anora. Like so far, I haven't had the opportunity to see a lot of these Oscar hype movies yet because again, so many of them were just like limited releases.
Mm-hmm.
I was just like waiting. There are a bunch that are getting hype right now, like Sing Sing, which played for like a week.
Yeah.
And I didn't know Sing Sing
was a movie until the AFI thing.
Yeah. So I need to get around to that. I need to get around to, I haven't seen Wicked yet either. Mm-hmm. Just like haven't had the time. Prioritize Gladiator 2, which was like one of the greatest mistakes I have made in a while, I think.
Gladiator 2 is fine, John.
It was not good.
It's good. It's entertaining.
Maybe that's my most disappointing movie of the year, and I'll see. But Anora is so, Sean Baker does such a phenomenal job at making something so absolutely, and this is just like Sean Baker in general with all of his films, so absolutely devastating and sad and just like heart-wrenching and making it fun that you don't realize how sad it is until you get to the very end of the film. You're like, oh, I feel awful now. Mm-hmm. And Mikey Madison, if Mikey Madison does not win Best Actor this year or Best Actress this year, I don't know how.
Because I think he's going to.
This movie is so spectacular.
That seems to be the one that everybody's most confident in. Jordan says, I've seen it three times and it just gets better every time.
Yeah, I mean,
also, Jordan said, Lily Rose Depp definitely deserves an Oscar nom, but the Academy in horror movies is frustrating. It's true. Yes. And I could see them giving it to a different horror movie this year because there's a couple.
It's The Substance. It's probably going to take away any of that like acting hype that Nosferatu will get.
Yeah. All right, my number one. Don't care.
You have to fully go into this Anora story for everyone now because we finally mentioned it. And this is the reason why it's not in your top five.
Yeah. So the only reason so it's hard to get movies down here, right? We don't get like, I don't live near an AMC where I live in Florida. We have a couple of other big chains, Regal, stuff like that. But like, they generally play smaller movies. Like I live in a suburban area of Florida where you're not going to get it. You have to drive down to Miami and Miami's like an hour and 15 minutes for me. And I drive down there a lot for work. So I don't want to go there for movies. So there's this little mom and pop theater 20 minutes from my place that every now and then will play these six movies, played Zone of Interest. They tend to play the Oscar movies and be the spot to go. So my wife and I bought tickets to go see Anora. We get into Anora. We're sitting there. Finally, guy comes in. He's like, hey, so like the company that sends us the movies never sent it to us, so we can't play it tonight. And I was like, are you joking? I've sat here for 40 minutes. And I'm like, I really want to see Anora. That's the one I keep going to. Yeah. And that's it, man. So that's not my number one. So I haven't been able to watch it. And I'm not going to say it's my, I mean, I like to watch movies and know. However, I could have told you this was going to be my number one before the year even began. John, what's my number one?
Before it even began?
Before the year even began. We all knew this movie was coming out. It's around a Memorial Day-ish release.
I can't think of what this movie is. Anything
weird over there. Okay, don't.
Why can't I think of what this movie is? Oh, of course. Oh, yeah. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, dude. There, I could not have asked for more from this reboot of what hopefully becomes a new trilogy following the trilogy that just came out in the 2010s. This movie is so good. It does everything that a Planet of the Apes fan could want. It ties in the score. It ties in the history. It starts to dive into like the religious aspect of who Caesar was and what Caesar did. I love this movie. Jordan says it was fine, but disappointing to him. Jordan, yeah. You know, every now and then you're going to be wrong. It's okay. You're right most of the time, but every now and then you just go wrong. I just loved it. I mean, it brought me back. And like when I watch the Planet of the Apes movies, it's like the first Planet of the Apes is a masterpiece. Like it's an undeniable masterpiece. The second Planet of the Apes wanted to make a better movie, but Charlton Heston was like, F you guys, I don't want to really be in it. So they had to do a totally different story than they wanted to. The third Planet of the Apes is very good. The fourth and fifth one are okay. And then they did this reboot with Tim Burton. And it's the worst movie. There's your word of the day, mega ass. Movie is that. That movie is the Marvels. That movie is Lady in the Water. That movie is, I'm ashamed that it was made and I'm ashamed to live in a world where it was. And then they remade these movies. And Rise of the Planet of the Apes comes out and it was like, yo, this is good. Like, I like this movie. Hello. And that trilogy just delivers all the way through. I talk all the time. Dawn of the Planet of the Apes is one of the best action movies ever made.
Mm-hmm.
And it wrapped up that story so nicely. And then they remake it and Wes Ball is directing it. I'm like, oh no, what does this mean? And to me, I could not have asked for a better movie. Look, does the ending and all that, like it starts to get like a little of your typical whatever, like you know where it's going. And it's not exactly the most groundbreaking ending by any means, but it sets up for the next and it sets up for what the Planet of the Apes fans want, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. As a massive Planet of the Apes fan, I truly believe this set up for what we want. I was thoroughly entertained the entire time. The special effects, visual effects are just second to none. It's gorgeous the entire way through. I really hope that it made enough money that we get a second and a third and we can wrap up this story and honestly tie it into the OG Planet of the Apes. It feels like that's where they're going.
Yeah. I mean, when we covered this for the podcast, I also really enjoyed it. This is like my eighth ranked movie of the year.
It's 27. They are talking about releasing.
Yeah. Well, because it did break in a lot of money. Remember?
Yeah. Like it was $397 worldwide. So it was like right on that line because it made a lot of money. Like it cost a lot of money. I mean,
But it was continuously like throughout all of May. It was just like, hey, look, this movie still doing well at the box office over and over again. It had that longevity that we don't normally see in movies anymore, where it's like, hey, this is having an extended run because people are continue to come out to this movie.
Yeah.
And it was quite good. It almost made my list it almost made my best action movie that I watched this year, but ultimately there was something else we watched that
until you told me the rules, it was my best action movie.
Yeah. But it was exactly what I wanted. And as we were talking about, and as you were just mentioned, this feels like we're finally getting to the point where we are going to get a remake of the Planet of the Apes. And it is going to make sense because of the setup that this movie's doing here.
And it's going to be so good. Yes. Like it really is. Ties over here, my top five, but I haven't seen Nosferatu yet. 5 Long Legs, 4 Smile 2, 3 Civil War, 2 A Different Man, 1 Kinds of Kindness. Second time he's mentioned A Different Man. Have you seen A Different Man?
I haven't yet.
Stan?
I haven't yet. I've heard good things, but I haven't gotten around to it.
Yeah, I have not seen that one. He's the second time mentioned. I'll have to check that out. He's getting all his credit right now for The Apprentice.
Yes.
Yikes.
Yes.
All right. Let's jump over to top three rewatches that are not in our top 100, because I think this will be a quicker one. We can rip through. I've probably talked about two of these movies so many times as it is. What do you have as your number three for this category?
And for clarification, this is our new top 100s that we.
Yes, this is our new top 100. Yeah.
This year. So number three, I rewatched it when we started our top 10, so we were talking about island movies, and I was like, oh yeah, this is an island movie, and then discovered it was not an island movie, and it's Swiss Army Man.
Yeah, Swiss Army Man is great.
It's so good. It's so clever. Daniel Radcliffe has this strange, niche, I do weird, wacky indie movies. Boy, what a fantastic direction he has gone as an actor, playing a corpse that farts its way to powering things and stuff. It is just such an incredible film. Paul Dano is spectacular in this movie. And on a rewatch, like the thing with like this top three rewatch not in my top 100, these are all movies I could see sneaking into my top 100 eventually. Mm-hmm. And Swiss Army Man is just like one where the first time I watched it, I was like, yeah, I enjoy it. And the second time I watched it, I was like, oh, this movie's a lot better than I remember it getting. Mm-hmm. And it's almost a bit unfortunate that Everything Everywhere All at Once is going to be the movie that the Daniels are remembered for, because this might be a better movie.
Yeah, Everything Everywhere All at Once I really enjoy, but I do agree it's a little chaotic. My number three is Eyes Wide Shut. I mean, I haven't seen that in forever. That is a perfect, perfect movie. Yeah. I mean, well done, Stanley. I love that movie so much. I forgot how much I love that movie until I rewatched it. I mean, we talked about it a little bit. I forget if what we did. Did we do it for a Patreon?
Yeah, I think we did it for a Patreon in like July or something like that.
Yeah. Eyes Wide Shut's great. So that's my number three. And then my number two is, and I'm just gonna do my two and one here because this is obvious. My two is Beauty and the Beast, my one is La La Land. I mean, I rewatched both of them this year. Anytime I watch those movies, they're gonna end up being amongst this because they both are always in my in consideration for my top 100. Like they're as close as you can be without actually being there. Mm-hmm. So and I just want to say Jordan said The Apprentice is very far from a pro Trump movie. I that's not why I roll my eyes at the movie. I roll my eyes at it more because it's like I feel like Hollywood has their way of just like making a movie that is it's almost like he's being hated for even making that movie. But then it was like the people who made that movie were like, oh, we're going to make a Trump movie during election year when we know it's going to be Trump. And like that type of stuff just always drives me crazy. It's like, I don't feel like it's as timely as people want it to be. And if it's an anti-Trump movie, Hollywood's really going to like it. If it's a pro-Trump movie, Hollywood's really going to hate it. That's just how I feel about it. And like, it seems like a lot of people in Hollywood didn't watch it because it is not a pro-Trump movie, but they're still angry about it. So I don't know. Sebastian Stan's very lucky his career kind of survived that, because that could have been career suicide, seriously.
We talked about that when we found out that when we found out about the movie. It was like, this is a decision to be doing. And to see him actually getting praise for it is kind of surprising, in all honesty.
Yeah. He's a good actor. I like Sebastian Stan. All right, John, what are your two and one for your top three rewatches?
Well, I mean, I'm going to comment, obviously, Beauty and the Beast is my favorite Disney movie of all time. So obviously, I commend that. And La La Land, when we rewatched it, when we were doing the bracket for the top 16 viewed movies on, or rated, what was it, top 16 highest rated movies on
Letterboxd? I think it was highest rated. Yep.
I've come around on La La Land. Like, I understand the hype on that movie. It's a very, very good film.
Yeah.
My number two is actually another movie we covered in the podcast. It's Sunshine, the Danny Boyle science fiction movie. That movie is so incredible, and it's arguably just one of the best, like, hard sci-fi movies out there that doesn't get enough hype. And on this rewatch, I really grew to appreciate the final act a lot more than you do on the first watch, where it feels like such a tonal shift. And the more and more I watch that movie, the more and more I'm just like, yeah, this movie's like really close to just sneaking in as that hard sci-fi movie in my top 100.
Yeah, I the third act is just never going to get there for me. It's fine, but it's never going to get there for me. I don't think it's as bad as people say, but it just isn't going to get there for me.
And number one is your number three. It's Eyes Wide Shut. Because I just had this realization that there's no way this movie doesn't make my next iteration of my top 100, because this might sound blasphemous, it might be my favorite Stanley Kubrick movie.
I don't think that's crazy at all. I mean, I wouldn't argue with anybody who said, if you said Killer's Kiss or Lolita are your favorite Stanley Kubrick's, I'd say you're crazy. And honestly, I'd say the same about Spartacus, because Spartacus aged like milk. But everything else, any other Stanley Kubrick movie, I mean, he was an artist, man. You can't go wrong with any of his other movies.
No, and Eyes Wide Shut is just this phenomenal. The performances by Tom Cruise, Nicole Kidman, is just absolutely spectacular. The movie is so well made. The fact that his movie prior to this was like 15 years before?
It was Full Metal Jacket 12 years before.
12 years before?
Was it 87? I think it was 87.
But the fact that he goes that long without making a movie, then his last film is arguably one of his best. Like, what a phenomenal director Kubrick was.
Yeah. I mean, there's no denying it, right?
No, not at all.
All right. Next category. Almost done here. So not as good as you remembered.
Yeah.
This was an easy one for me.
It was also an easy one for me.
I've been rewatching the Disney animated movies, like all of them in order. That's just something I wanted to do, because it's fun to see how like Disney grew and changed and all that. Fox and the Hound, man, does not hold up. It really doesn't. I
haven't seen a movie in forever.
Which is a shame, because as a kid, I was like, this is great. And now it's like so over the top melodramatic, which is a bummer, because it doesn't need to be. So yeah, that's my easy, not as good as I remember.
What year did that one come out? It was in the 80s, right?
I think it was in the 70s. I think it was the late 70s. Fox and the Hound. Or maybe it was the 80s. Let me check here. 81. So there you go.
Yeah. So it was that stretch right before the Renaissance where like Disney was not making some... That's like the dark ages of Disney.
I mean, but the thing is, Great Mouse Detective came out during that span, and one of the best ones.
Yeah. But
it's one of the best ones, so...
Yeah, I don't remember the last time I watched The Fox and the Hound. I don't think I liked it, though. But I know it was probably a child, so we'll see. But my not as good as remembered, man. When we did the Ridley Scott top 10, I did too much. My letterbox is forever tainted with Ridley Scott being my most watched director, because I watched 23 Ridley Scott movies in that stretch.
Yeah, that was a dumb idea.
It was. It was painful. I kind of at a point where I never want to watch another Ridley Scott movie again. And like, that's a shame, because Alien is obviously one of my favorite movies of all time. And Gladiator, also phenomenal. Gladiator 2, not so phenomenal. But they're not as good as remember, Kingdom of Heaven, because my God, that movie is so...
John bad. Literally was ready to do that for the Patreon, and then he texted me and was like, never mind, this movie's horrible.
Yeah.
I got a mid-watch text. Yes. That's how bad Kingdom of Heaven was for John.
Yeah. And now, granted, like, the director's cut, I might have to revisit, and it's probably a lot better. But the theatrical cut of Kingdom of Heaven is unwatchably bad.
Yeah.
You go, like, an hour, like, it's 2.5 hours long, and I think almost 2 hours into the movie, my friends and I are like, wait, what's the main character's name?
Mm-hmm. It's Orlando Bloom.
Yeah, it's Orlando Bloom. There's so little dialogue in that movie. There's nothing, there's none of this nuance of, hey, why are we making a movie about the Crusades? What's the conflict going on here? And it's just like completely cut from the theatrical release of that movie. And the director's cut is 3.5 hours long.
Yeah.
Again, it gets into that Ridley Scott problem of Ridley Scott doesn't know how to edit himself.
He doesn't. And
whenever he edits something down for the theatrical cut, he edits all the good parts out of his movies.
Yeah. Or a producer is telling him the wrong things, right? It's one or the other for sure.
Yeah.
All right, before we jump into our last categories here, I want to just catch up on the chat because there's some good ones. Ty, another underrated 2024 film is Book of Clarence. Did you see that?
No, I don't even
know. I think that was Lakeith Stanfield, if I'm not mistaken. Let me see. Book of Clarence. I think that was Lakeith Stanfield. It was Lakeith Stanfield. Yeah, that.
Lakeith Stanfield.
Yeah. So that's one. I didn't see that.
I do remember this movie coming out. Yeah, I didn't check it out.
Kevin Hernandez as Hannah and her sisters is still funny, and Incendies is still heartbreaking. Somehow still haven't seen either of those. Alford says that Kubrick's on the Mount Rushmore with Kurosawa, Hitchcock, and Ford.
That's a top four. That's a top four.
That's a top four. Ford is the one who could fall off the train, fall off the stagecoach, if you will.
Yeah. There's also no Tarkovsky mention in there, and that's just like I don't know about that.
I mean, Tarkovsky's not in there. Ty's favorite director is Ari Aster, and then Raptor says One Stormy Night is The Fox and the Hound done better. Never saw that. And on the argument here that's happening in the chat about Sleeping Beauty, Sleeping Beauty's great. I love Sleeping Beauty.
There you go.
Oh, there you go. We've caught up. Chat's in. Before we do our best five first watches of the year, let's get into these genre-based ones. So let's start with action, because this is the one that I don't even know what the hell I'm doing. I have Batman. Like, literally 1989 Batman. I don't think I'd ever seen that movie. I think I mentioned this. Like, I had never seen 1989 Batman totally through as an adult. Like, as a child, sure, but I don't remember it. So I counted it as a first watch. Yeah, I put it as my best action movie, the Tim Burton 1989 one. I think it's super entertaining. I think I gave it 4 stars. I really liked it. So there you go.
Tim Burton really did give that, like, the aesthetic in that film is so good. Mm-hmm. It really worked as like this cartoonish Batman that led into the Batman craze of the 90s.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so comic book-y. Yeah, it is. It is.
So yeah, it's really great. Yeah, I respect that choice.
What's your best action?
My best action is another one we covered for the Patreon. Or no, we didn't cover it for the Patreon. We covered it when we were doing, you haven't seen that, Hard Boiled.
Oh, dude, Hard Boiled is such, but I had seen that, so I didn't count. Yeah. Like, this is first watches, best action. That's what we're going on here, right? It's first watches.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Hard Boiled is a masterpiece. If you haven't seen Hard Boiled, just blow you away with the action sequences from John Woo.
Yeah. I mean, it's the reason why John Woo gets MI2. Like, it's the reason why John Woo is even mentioned as one of the greatest action directors of all time. Everything about that movie, like Chung Hao Fat and Tony Leung, are just so good in that movie. It's nonstop. The action literally does not stop for the entire 90-minute runtime. It's great, and you can watch it on YouTube for free.
Yeah. Your answer is better than mine. I have the Blu-ray. My friend let me borrow it, and then that turned into me driving across the country with it in my bag. So
yeah, it happens.
Oops. I'll get it back one day. He had 2 copies. It's fine.
Yeah. Sure.
What was your best horror first watch? Because we did a whole bunch of horror stuff.
And if you recall correctly, I watched like 83 horror movies.
Yeah, I don't know why you do these things to yourself.
September 13th and the end of October. Straight. And I realized afterwards that was way too much horror movies to watch in a row. Hmm. But I ended up going with, because that'd be a first time watch. And I hummed and hawed about it, but it really came down, it was Audition.
Yeah, Audition's dope. I can't use Audition because I've seen it before, but Audition is such a good movie. Oh my god.
It's so good. And it's the fact that it's not a horror movie for the majority of it really brings it up. And it's just so well done. Takashi Miike is just a spectacular director.
Yeah. Yeah. I really love Audition. I've told the story of how I got to see that in a theater. And I realized quickly that my sister and I were the only two who had seen it before. Audition is such a messed up, disgusting movie. People, Kevin Hernandez says nobody talks about Monkey Man anymore. I didn't see Monkey Man, the Dev Patel movie. I didn't see it.
It was fine. Yeah. That's kind of how I felt about it. It was nice seeing, like, Dev Patel leading was really good. His direction was fairly good for, like, the action sequences and stuff. Mm-hmm. It just kind of left me desiring a little bit more out of it. But mm-hmm. for what it was good. There's just, like, better movies that do the same thing, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. And Hard Boiled is...
Yeah, so, exactly. Yeah. So what was your best horror movie?
First Possession. In terms of first watches, it was Possession. Like, obviously, I watched It Follows again. I watched, you know, I watched a bunch of horror movies. I don't remember exactly what I watched before we started podcasting and stuff. But for first time, Possession, hands down. Well done.
Great option.
Really well done movie. Lake Mungo was close, though.
Also a great possibility there, for sure.
Lake Mungo is very good.
Yeah.
Let's do drama first, because comedy is fun. Drama is sad.
Yeah, okay.
I haven't. I'm gonna do mine first because nobody's gonna have watched it. Marketa Lazarova.
I'm sorry, what?
Yeah, Marketa Lazarova. It's really more of an epic, but I guess it qualifies as a drama, and I'm gonna count it as a genre. Why am I saying genre instead of drama? What the heck is going on? John, it blows my mind you haven't seen Marketa Lazarova.
I've never heard of this movie.
Wow. Wow, John, I guess you're not really into Eastern European cinema, huh?
I guess not.
Yeah, so it's like the only Czech movie people have heard of. And our buddy Steve, he loved it. He had seen it. So I got it as a criterion. I have the criterion for me. And just a beautiful black and white, epic, epic, epic movie set in the Middle Ages. It's so awesome. Like, it's so, so awesome. John, you'd love it. Like, honestly, it blows my mind you've never heard of it. You would absolutely love it.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now, and it looks like something I definitely need to see, so it is definitely going on the watch list for this.
I mean, literally just from the poster, right? Two wolves walking towards a girl laying down in snow with blood all around her? That's John.
Yeah, exactly. That's totally me right there. That just screams, this is a John movie. Make it black and white and Eastern European all over it.
Can't get enough. Over here, Kevin Hernandez says, for horror, it's a tie between The Collector, Eden Lake, and Wolf Creek. And Jordan Alford says it's The Witch for first time watches. I'm surprised, Jordan, you hadn't seen The Witch until now.
Wow, Jordan, I am surprised by
that. Yeah, Jordan's a movie guy.
Fun fact about Kevin Hernandez's Wolf Creek mention, released on Christmas Day, was considering watching it, but then there were just too many good movies released on Christmas Day.
I haven't seen Wolf Creek in a very long time, like to the point where I barely remember it, but I remember being surprised by it, but I was also a youth, so.
Yeah. But it's also one of those, like, surprising Australian movies.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's one that I need to get around to, for sure.
Absolutely. All right, let's close this out with the genres, and then we'll get into
it. I still need my best drama.
Oh, you didn't do your best drama?
I haven't. No.
Oh.
And I'm kind of torn. I'm kind of torn between two.
Okay.
And this was really tight. And the awkward thing about them, they're both anatomy of a something.
Mmm.
And I can't decide. I think I'm leaning.
Do you like murder or do you like Falling? That's the question.
I think I like murder more, but Fall deserved the call out because Fall was so good. But Anatomy of Murder is just absolutely spectacular.
The score for Anatomy of a Murder is just like 10 out of 10 incredible.
Yeah.
That's really what it is for me. The Duke Ellington score is so cool. I love it. I mean, both of those movies are good answers. I may be talking about one of them shortly. So which are you actually going with?
I'm going with Anatomy of a Murder.
Okay.
I am. As much as like the chagrin to the people who hate Jimmy Stewart, but no, Otto Preminger just did such a good job with the direction in that movie and the way it just captures everything about this case and the like kind of noir aspect of the film. It's just so fantastic.
Yeah. I love Anatomy of a Murder. We did that one for Patreon. That's a good one.
Yeah.
All right. Best comedy.
Well, I mean, come on. In a year, we watched 12 Adam Sandler movies. Did you really think I wasn't going to name one? It's Billy Madison.
Because this is the first time you saw Billy Madison, right?
It was the first time I saw Billy
Madison. Yeah, I had seen all the Sandler movies we did.
Yeah.
So I couldn't use that. Although I wish I could have, because everybody loves a good Sandler movie, but I did Spinal Tap.
That's also a great Spinal choice. Tap,
and that was so good.
Yeah, that's also hilarious.
But you went Billy Madison. Billy Madison gets the nod. That was your like. Well, how many stars did you give Billy Madison?
3.5. I realized I didn't watch a lot of I didn't watch a bunch of new comedies that I was really into that weren't in these other lists. Technically, Anora is a comedy, and Hundreds of Beavers obviously is a comedy, but they were already in these other lists. And what it came down to is, we crowned Billy Madison the
most Adam Sandler movie.
Good point. And it's really just it makes you understand why people love Adam Sandler. It's just a really well done movie that's hilarious the entire way through. And still holds the best comedy line of ever, which is, if peeing my pants is cool, I'm Miles Davis.
Dude, that line is so good. Adam Sandler was so good for what he was back in the day. Like you said, there's a reason why he caught on, and some of his humor, we did the Waterboy, yikes. But at this point, I wish there were more Adam Sandler movies. It was a simpler time, those 90s.
Yeah.
All right, so that leaves only our best five watches from any year.
What was your best comedy?
I said Spinal Tap.
Oh, right.
Yeah, this is Spinal Tap. We
talked about it. Yeah.
The lyrics to those songs are just out of control good.
Rob Reiner, low-key, very good director.
Dude, when Rob Reiner does the arm cross at the beginning of the movie, I talked about it when we did the podcast, but it's that is one of the funniest moments. And I was like, oh, that's what this movie is. Okay. Yeah. Okay, that's what this movie is. It's just that type of acting just crushes me. Our best five first watches, this could be from any year, dude. Three of mine are from last year.
Wow.
And it's because we were watching them for Oscar time.
Yeah.
And then they all just were 2023. One of my movies I watched on January 1st of 2023 or 2024.
Yeah.
So here we are. I'm going to do my five first. It is Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. That's stuck in there. Look, I didn't watch that many four-star movies this year. I watched about 200 movies. And of the 200 movies that I watched, I always put together a list of best movies I watched the first time in 2024. I only had 13 first watches.
What?
That got 4 stars.
Wow.
Which was low. So it was tough. And I thought about Marquetta Lazarova, Nosferatu, Spinal Tap. But honestly, at the end of the day, I just like Planet of the Apes. Okay.
Yep.
I like Planet of the Apes. So that's what I went with. Anyway, so 15 or my number five, Kingdom of Planet of the Apes. What's your number five?
My number five is one of those Oscar movies from last year that came out in 2023, but we didn't get it released here until later. So we watched it in 2024. And it was arguably the best made movie of last year.
Hey, this is my number four.
Everyone knows Past Lives is my favorite movie from last year, but The Zone of Interest might just be the best made movie of last year.
That's my number four.
It was spectacular. It was terrifying. What Jonathan Glazer does in that film is unthinkable. To be able to make a film with such atrocities right there, and it's just looming over everything, because Auschwitz is right there.
Yeah.
But you never see any of it.
Yep.
Spectacular. The cut scene, or the cutaway to the present time and then back, absolutely brilliant. And to come from Jonathan Glazer, it's just absolutely spectacular. And no wonder that it was such a powerhouse film.
Yeah, I loved The Zone of Interest. I know that movie's not for everybody, but I agree with you. The sound design in that movie is a character within itself.
Yeah.
So that's my number four. What was your four?
My number four is Chungking Express. I know, when we got around to watching it for the Patreon, I know you're not as high on it, but it was one of those, hey, this is totally a John movie, and it's totally a John movie. It's so well done. I don't know. I have this zappiness to me, of course, and it's just so awkward. And California Dreaming, never, ever going to feel any other way to me than it does in Chungking Express. It's so good. And Wong Kar-wai, just really good director.
Yeah, it went up for me on this second watch. It did go up, but at the end of the day, I still think it's an overrated movie. I get why people like it, but I think it's a little overrated. And it did go up for me, though, on this watch.
Well, you still had that problem with the first half of the movie, right? That first act of the movie.
Yeah.
So I get it, but it hit for me. It all hit for me. And just like the conversations that are happening in that movie just feel so relevant still.
Number three, Anatomy of a Fall. There you go.
Yeah.
That's my
totally understandable.
There's my number three. Love that movie. Sandra Hüller, her versus Emma Stone versus Lily Gladstone will go down as one of the strongest, best actress categories ever. Sandra Hüller is so good in that movie. And honestly, I forget, what was his name? Anton something? What's the name of the guy who plays plays the barrister? The opposition, whatever.
Yeah, the opposition.
The prosecutor. Antoine Reinhardt.
Yeah.
What a performance by Antoine Reinhardt. Like, yeah. I really love that movie. Really, really great movie. So
really well done.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think it's really a surprise that you just named two Sandra Hüller movies in a row.
Yeah.
Because Sandra Hüller was absolutely spectacular last year. Mm-hmm.
She was great. What do you got?
Well, speaking of absolutely spectacular performances, this is a movie I don't know if I could ever watch this movie again, but it's definitely here because it is going to leave a lasting impression on me, and that is Leaving Las Vegas.
Leaving Las Vegas is brutal. You're watching Nicolas Cage drown the entire movie.
Yeah, it's a hard watch. It's probably the most depressing. It's not the most depressing movie, because I'm going to name a more depressing movie pretty soon. Uh-huh. But it's up there as one of the most depressing movies of all time. And there is no wonder Nicolas Cage won his Oscar for this. Like, it is, what a spectacular performance. This is, it's tough, but like, if you can, and I mean, like, we're also talking like the Zone of Interest and everything like that. Like, where there's a tough movies that I like suffering, I guess. But if you can stomach like a tough watch, do yourself a favor and watch Leaving Las Vegas, because it is honestly better than most people even say it is. And everyone praises this movie. It's just so hard to watch, and it's one of those movies that will never make my top 100 because it's so hard to watch.
It's so hard to watch. I say that all the time. Like, it's to the point where it's actually like, it's like you have to question, okay, I know this is great, but is this something that I want to put on? I've seen it once, and I don't think I'll ever see it again. Nicolas Cage is brilliant, but it's just so hard to sit through.
Yeah, it's one of those ones that you kind of have to forget you watched before you watch it again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Number two, this was the movie I watched on January 1st of last year. That is Saltburn.
Oh yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. Saltburn was my number two. Watched it on January 1st, kick off the year the right way. I talked about it, like, that movie got really no love Oscar time and everything. I was surprised.
Why?
I was really surprised. I thought it was a really well-made movie. I know it's like the talented Mr. Ripley story and all that, but I just thought it was so damn well done. I Murder on the Dance Floor just took over, right?
Like,
the end of that movie, it's so good.
I think Saltburn is so important for cinema in general. I think, and it's really hard to say this, but like, this year, the one thing I did see this year with cinema that gave me a lot of hope, there were a lot of like independent movies or like movies by like directors that have like a lot of names for film people that pulled a lot of people. And I think Saltburn is part of the reason why Challengers became so popular.
Yeah, I
agree. Why Anora. I went to Anora on opening night to a full theater. Mm-hmm. Like, that shouldn't happen.
Yeah.
But there's so much hype around some of these like more indie films, and Saltburn is the reason why. Barry Coogan kills it in that movie. Emerald Fennell's direction is absolutely spectacular. It is, again, like, it's a hard watch movie, but it's so, so good.
I really love, sorry, I got to answer that, but I really, really love the direction from Emerald Fennell. And I think it's weird that she got so much for Promising Young Woman and like nothing for this.
And this was a much better movie than
Promising. And then Greta Gerwig got all of the acclaim for Barbie, which I understand. Like, it was the blockbuster. It was the movie people went and saw. But like, Saltburn's direction and everything is just, it's just better. Like, I don't really care. Like, yeah, Barbie's a better looking movie, but like, from an actual
art, depends what you're looking for, I suppose.
Yeah, that's true. But I think from like an artistic point of view, I think Saltburn takes it. And I really love, like, I don't know, just the whole thing. So that's my number two.
Yeah, I think Saltburn was easily the movie that should have been nominated for Best Picture last year that wasn't nominated for it. And again, last year's Best Picture nomination crop was so strong. Like, mm-hmm. Barbie's the weakest of those movies.
For sure.
And like, it's still not a bad movie. It's still an enjoyable film. But Saltburn kind of just felt like it was on another level. But it felt like, it almost felt like it picked up too much steam after Oscar nominations were decided.
Yeah. And I think too, the fact that it was like an Amazon release didn't help it.
Yeah.
That definitely didn't help it, because I don't really remember how theatrical it was.
Yeah, but it picked up steam, and like, I am so happy to see movies like that becoming popular with the general masses.
Yeah.
As long as they stop taking their phones out of the movie theater.
I know. That was the other good thing about watching American Beauty. Nobody has a cell phone in the movie. What a weird world we used to live in. Truly. Jordan hated Tar.
Okay, another, first off, Tar was 2 years ago.
Over two. And that was, yeah, that was 2 years ago, right? That wasn't last year's Oscars?
No, it was the same year as Everything Everywhere All at Once, because we were talking about how Kate Blanchett was, like, Michelle Yeoh did a phenomenal job in that movie to win Best
Actress. Yes, that's right. Kate Blanchett.
Kate Blanchett? Like, come on. That, her performance in that movie was on another level.
Yeah. Robbed.
Yeah. My number two, right?
Yeah.
My number two was one that I watched while we were preparing for our top non-English horror movies. And that's House, or Houseu,
yeah,
the Japanese horror movie from 1979. It is, oh, this is an instant classic. I'm watching this movie, I was like, this is one of my favorite movies of all time.
Mm-hmm.
It is something that I am going, that will end up in my top 100, like, no question about it. It's so spectacular. It's so funny. It's so weird. And it's so just itself. Mm-hmm. And I loved it, every minute of it.
Yeah, I haven't seen it still. You talked highly about it. It gets really good reviews everywhere I look, but it's just one I have not gotten around to yet. Although, you know, Criterion keeps doing sales. Maybe eventually I will watch it.
Oh, it's definitely one that I'm going to be picking up in physical media. Mm-hmm. I have to. It's just one that I want.
Criterion, there's 50% sales, and it's always there.
It does. I know. Yeah. I just have to wait. Eventually, it's going to come. It's going to come home to me.
All right. My number one, a movie that we did. Already talked about a lot. Matchstick Men.
Yeah, that's a good pick.
Matchstick Men. Matchstick Men was one that I had always missed, that I really, you know, never thought I'd get around to. I totally didn't realize it was Ridley Scott for the longest time. And then we watched it for the Ridley Scott podcast, and I'm like, how the hell did I never watch this movie? Pure entertainment, great performances, awesome writing, nice twist at the end, even if you start to see it coming. Just a really great movie. And so Matchstick Men comes in there at number one for me as the best movie I watched this year.
Yeah, solid pick. One that was definitely in top consideration for my list in general. I think, like, if it wasn't for, like, the gravitas of these other films, it would probably be in my top five. I think it, like, just missed out. It was surprising. Again, in watching all of these Ridley Scott, all those 23 Ridley Scott movies this year, mm-hmm. it surprised me as one of those, like, oh my God, Ridley Scott can make a really good movie.
Yeah. Yeah. And he can. And it's like, yeah, he can get into characters and he can do all that. He just chooses not to a lot of the time.
Yeah, it's so unfortunate. But when he does it, it's, and this is the problem with Ridley Scott, is you always have to go to a movie because there's a potential it'll be really, really good. Yeah.
It's always got the potential to be great. Although recently, I mean, but that's what we were talking about. Like, The Last Duel actually is one of his best movies.
Yeah.
And nobody saw it.
It's just Ridley Scott. We'll see what happens with the next one, I'm sure.
Yeah. So what's your top?
Oh, my top. So I did talk about, like, House is in my top 100, my next iteration of my top 100 for sure. This movie will never be in my top 100. I don't know if I can ever watch this movie again.
Hey, this is what I said to you.
Yeah.
Now I know what it is.
It's Come and See.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, this is a movie that I finally got around to watching it. And, whoa. There's a reason people say this is one of the greatest war movie of all time. Mm-hmm. I have never seen an anti-war movie this way. There is a 30-minute sequence in this that actually just destroys you. I curled into a ball as I watched this movie. And, like, as it ended, I sat there in the dark for, like, 20 minutes before I could, like, do anything. It is, and for a movie to have that much impact on me, oh, it's got to be a good one. And it's a movie that it's really unfortunate that I won't be able to watch it again, because it is so well made. It is so spectacular. But this is legitimately the one movie I don't think I could ever watch again.
Mm-hmm. I'll have to watch it eventually. It's on my list. It's very high reviewed on Letterboxd, and that's why it's on my list. I hadn't even heard of it before that, but it's one I'll definitely have to get into.
Yeah, it's definitely worth a watch. Watch it for the first time. And then regret every decision.
Yeah, and then never watch it again.
Bring you to that point. Yeah.
Well, there you have it. That's our 2024 year in review. And obviously, when we get into this year, as Oscar nominations and stuff come out, we will dive in and we will cover everything. You're not going to do Golden Globe stuff. But also, once you become a patron, once the Oscar Best Picture nominees are announced, John and I put out our Best Picture movie recap or whatever, where we review them and we talk about them and all of that. So that'll be a busy February. I don't know, when are Oscar nominations this year?
They were late last year, right?
They were. Nominations are Friday, January 17th. Okay, so only 2 weeks.
Oh, 2 weeks. Sweet.
Yeah, that's not bad. So 2 weeks, and then we have until March 2nd. So we'll be able to pan that out, and that might give us like the perfect amount of time to do two per week.
Yeah. It's exciting.
And we do it in alphabetical order. That's what we did last time, and that's what we're going to do this time.
Yep. Absolutely.
So, all right, everybody. Thank you all so much for listening. John and I are going to be doing inspirational movies as our next thing, which will be on the 13th. I think the 13th. I didn't actually ask John if he's available, but I can do the 13th.
That's fine.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. Now that the holidays are over, we can actually be like regular people again. It's such a wild concept, right?
It's weird. And with Survivor on a bit of a break, it makes
sense. I know. Well, I am going to be having Deal or No Deal Island and the Traders coming up. So I'm going to have plenty to keep me busy. But thank you all so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this. Let us know what your answers to each of these questions are, and we will see you in 12 days. Happy New Year.